Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Ilson, and we're set as usual for our Sunday show, and I hope you have a very, very pleasant day. The Cubs wind up their series with Pittsburgh today, and Wrigley Field, as you know, Friday and Saturday was jammed. And the Chicago White Sox will wind up their series at New York against the New York Yankees. Also, the hockey playoffs are underway, and all but one has been finalized, and the Blackhawks move into Stanley Cup contention next Friday. There's still just a little bit of doubt as to who their first opponent will be, but it let's hope it won't be Montreal, and equally as bad would be Boston. Let's hope it's somebody else. But anyway, the Blackhawks wound up a successful season. The basketball playoffs are still going on. People say that every season runs a little bit too long. Anyway, our guest today is going to be an old friend of mine, and that's Ray Sons, who is the sports editor of one of our great newspapers, the Chicago Sun-Times. And we have many things to talk about. You know, one of the things that you never realize, unless you have occasion to, and I'm referring to the fact that many times when I was on the baseball beat, for example, three times we were in Detroit when there was a newspaper strike. And when you can't go and get a newspaper, you realize the importance a newspaper plays in any community. Same way in New York, twice during the 38 years that I was on the baseball beat, they had a newspaper strike in New York. You couldn't get a newspaper. So the importance of a newspaper in any city, in any community, cannot be overplayed, as you all know. If there was no newspaper, we'd all miss it to beat the band. So our guest today will be Ray Sons. We have many things to talk about, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. Our guest today is Ray Sons, the sports editor of the Chicago Sun-Times, as I mentioned before, one of our great newspapers. Ray, in the business of running or help to operate a sports department, what is the breakdown when it comes to the priorities of who gets the most publicity? For example, right now you have Major League Baseball, you have the Stanley Cup playoffs, you have the NBA basketball. What is the battle for priority here, or is that decided within the framework of the sports department?
Well, I think the battle for priority is in the minds of the fan, and we have to try to judge it, Bob. That's our big problem. We can't always guess right, but we try to judge what the fan wants to read about most on a particular day. And so our coverage is geared toward what we judge to be the fan's interest. This week, no question, you know, when the Cubs open in Wrigley Field, there's no question that that's the number one interest in Chicago. When the Sox opened in Comiskey Park the week before, our job was very easy. We knew very well what people wanted to read about. But this coming week, we run into a little bit of a problem. You have to make a judgment call. The Blackhawks will be playing in the Stanley Cup playoffs. If the Cubs and the White Sox continue to perform as well as they have, and the Hawks lose, we'll say, on the road the first two games, well, then the Hawks might have trouble competing with the baseball teams for our space. But and it would be even more complicated, of course, if the Bulls had done as well as we had expected. But it's mainly a matter of just trying to judge what the fans are most interested in. And, I must say that we also have a sport I see so many people involved in. We've sent John Shulian, one of our columnists, to Boston to cover the Boston Marathon on Monday. And you can hardly go out in Lincoln Park these days without getting trampled by a herd of joggers, so I'm sure that there's a lot of interest in that.
What happened to the story that Mayor Blandick was going to complete? Or compete?
I don't really know what his status is at this time. There was a certain amount of controversy over how he got into the field or whether he was really eligible. I know he can jog a heck of a lot farther than I can, so I won't criticize.
I know that in covering the sports scene, one of your main interests has been football, and you've done some great writing on that very popular sport. I can't quite understand the Chambers business. What's the story behind the story here?
I think they had come to a point of no return. I just don't believe that Wally and his agent had any idea of Wally staying in Chicago. I don't think Wally wanted to stay in Chicago anymore. And I just, I have mixed reactions about this thing. There's no question that Jim Finks did belittle Wally Chambers' efforts to rehabilitate himself through the late half of last year. Perhaps Jim was right. I'll say this, that Wally did not show, as I understand it, the dedication toward rehabilitation that some of the other athletes I've seen who have had problems. But Wally's talent has been so great that he didn't really have to train as hard as a lot of other athletes did. You know, people tell me about Babe Ruth and how he trained, and I shudder to think at how a man could do all of that on his training methods. And I've known other athletes who are of exceptional skill, and Chambers certainly is one of them, who could get by in their prime before injury just on the gifts that God gave them and very little else. They didn't have to work quite as hard as other athletes because so much came to them naturally. With Chambers, it was a matter of tremendous quickness. He couldn't be blocked by one man because he would he'd very often go right by that man without being touched. Uh-huh. When his knee began to bother him, of course, that removed just a little bit of that quickness. Then he didn't care to strengthen the knee in the way the Bears thought he ought to. I mean, he didn't, he just didn't work quite as hard as they thought he should, and they criticized him for it. And in the course of that criticism, they alienated him, I'm afraid, to the point where he didn't really want to play for Jim Finks.
I think so, too. Reading in your paper yesterday morning that he had signed 5 one-year contracts with his new club, the Tampa Club. What does that indicate? He can play 1 year and...
I think that I'm not sure the technicalities of that, whether it permits him to play 1 year and have an out and become a free agent again. Perhaps that's the idea. I'm not sure about that. But I would think that it would be more of a risk in this case for Tampa to have him tied to 5 straight years in which they had to compensate him. But my guess is that the clauses will stipulate that, you know, unless he can play, they don't have to compensate him.
Staying on the subject of football now, they say that Peyton, who is certainly one of the great backs to ever appear in a uniform anyplace, wants the same contract that Orange Juice Simpson had, almost $500,000 a year. That hardly goes along with George Halas's philosophy of the value of a single player in a team game where one guy doesn't do it all. Now, for example, they talk about player salaries. Gary Player won the Masters all by himself. These great bowlers, they have to do it all by themselves. The tennis players do it. But baseball, like football, is a team game. In football, you're one of 11. In baseball, you're one of 9. That's how it's hard to understand some of these fantastic salaries.
That's true, but I think that in Peyton's case, if I were Peyton, I would ask for as much as O.J. Simpson is getting. I don't know that the Bears are going to pay him that, but that's a starting point in the bargaining. If I were Peyton, I wouldn't settle for an awful lot less, because at this time, Peyton is more valuable than Simpson. From a standpoint of winning a championship, we'll say. Simpson's he's had his injuries and is now below the peak of his career. He can still be a tremendous help and a tremendous draw, but Simpson has earned the salary he's getting by the performance of several years. Peyton is still, he's going into his fourth season. I don't think that he should receive quite as much as Simpson, even though a team would regard him as more valuable today. Another couple of years, he should certainly be getting, the salary that Simpson is getting now. But running backs in particular, Bob, I think that they deserve more money than your average star athlete because a career is so short. And I still remember how short Gale Sayers' career was, for instance. Just all of a sudden, you never know the tackle that's going to eliminate you. You can repair a knee, but when you repair it, there's a little bit of the quickness, the nimbleness, the agility that once existed is gone, and that little bit may be what sets you above all the other running backs.
And the hazard of getting hit again is double.
Oh yes, football is a very dangerous game. The average career is 4-point-something years, and for a running back, he has to take what he can get when he's there because he's not going to be there long.
Ray Sons, with your interest in football, were you surprised at the Bears' choice of a head coach? This guy kind of came out of left field. Armstrong.
Not at all. I wasn't surprised. I was surprised that it was Neil Armstrong. I knew it would be someone like Neil Armstrong. Jim Finks, whom I respect a great deal as a football administrator, is a man who has to run the organization. He's a very strong man. And he's not going to hire somebody who's going to rival his authority. He's going to hire a good man who can run his football team. And he's not going to make any great waves. I think you have a similar situation out in Oakland where Al Davis and John Madden have gotten along very well in that sort of a situation for years. And Madden's a very good coach. He doesn't try to be anything more than that. He doesn't try to dabble in Al Davis's end of the business. That's the way Finks likes his coach. And Finks likes a man that the players can look up to and respect and work for. And I think in Neil Armstrong and in Jack Pardee and in Bud Grant, he's been very good at getting this sort of people.
Were you surprised at Pardee going to Washington?
I was stunned. I knew that there was a coolness there, and I still don't quite understand it. We were all very surprised, and the surface reasons given just don't make sense to me at all. I don't know really what the thinking is there. If I were Pardee, I'd have stayed going to a place in Washington there where he may have gotten more money, but that team's going to go downhill. And for a young coach to take on a team that's going to go downhill and abandon a team that he has brought to the point where it's going to be up there for a few years, it's silly, I think, a silly career decision.
Of course, he was getting $50,000 a year with the Bears, and he's getting $125,000 in fringe benefits with Washington. Now, that's a $75,000 boost in salary. Could have influenced.
No question of that, but with his contract coming to an end in Chicago, he was going to get a great big raise here, and deservedly so. He had earned it. I don't think that the Bear organization will throw money around with quite the abandon that the Washington organization has thrown it around. But in Washington, they charge you an arm and a leg to get into the ballpark, too. I think the Bear organization would have compensated him quite well, although not as well as Washington. But in the long run, if you're going to be a successful coach, and you've only been a head coach in the National Football League for 3 years, I think you ought to stay where you're going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl in a couple of years.
We both are acquainted with the former Washington coach, and I understand that Bennett Williams got the shock of his life when this guy started to throw money around.
Well, that's been Georgia's history, no question. That what was Bennett's famous his famous crack was he gave George Allen an unlimited expense account, and he went beyond it in the first week. That was he had that history in Los Angeles, where he was first head coach. In fact, he got in trouble with the management in Los Angeles because he would make side deals with the ball players and promise them things that the top management, the ownership level, Dan Reeves, the late Dan Reeves, just wasn't going to stand for and wouldn't pay. So he would play people in management out there told me that George Allen would play the players against the owners and play, hey, I'm your buddy and the owners don't appreciate you, but I do, and hand them things that the owner couldn't really in good economics, couldn't afford to do.
Our guest today is Ray Sons, the sports editor of one of our great newspapers, the Chicago Sun-Times. And we will be back with our guest in just a moment. We're delighted to have Ray Sons, the sports editor of the Sun-Times, as my guest. I have already thanked you for the nice column you wrote about me. I had quite a bit of reaction to it. People were phoning me as though I hadn't seen it or didn't know about it and saying, gee, don't miss getting the Sun-Times, because Sons has got quite a story in there about you, but it was very kind of you and very thoughtful, and I appreciate it.
Well, I certainly enjoyed doing the column. I twirl a dial looking for a Sox game, and the voice I get doesn't sound at all like yours, and it seems rather strange at times.
You know, while we're on the subject of football, let's go one more. Detroit, a great sports town. I used to love to go in there to do baseball. They've made a terrific comeback, as you know, in hockey. But they seem to be, for the last few years, have been all screwed up with their football set up there. What is it? Is it Ford wants to run it over there? Or what is the problem in Detroit?
Well, I think it's divided interest at the top. I don't think you really have cohesive leadership in the front office there. Ford has every right to dabble in the business, but I think we've had a similar situation with the Bulls here in town. You get into a situation where people who are on the ownership level but are not expert in the operation of a sports franchise, we'll say, are not expert in this particular sport, and they want to dabble in. Well, I've heard even that the top level of the Detroit management would want to decide who was going to play quarterback. Well, you just can't do that, and any more than guys who are in, we'll say, the securities business can decide who's going to be your power forward on the Bulls. You just can't do that and succeed. You have to have a person. I think the Bears were very wise in bringing Jim Finks in to run the operation and giving him total authority. The results have been obvious. I think the Bulls should do the same thing. I think Detroit has to give get a good general manager, give him total control. Now, they just made a coaching change up there, and I think if they let Monty Clark run things, perhaps things will be on the way up, but they've had too much of a divided house at the top.
George Halas has done a remarkable job of really staying out of the picture, hasn't he? And I know the intense interest he still has in the game.
He certainly does. He is, I never thought it would happen. I was absolutely flabbergasted when they brought in Jim Finks. I never thought that Halas would leave everything alone and give Finks everything he needed to build a winner. And I'm sure none of us in the sports writing end of it thought so. And by gosh, George was as good as his word. He's given Finks everything he could want, in my opinion, and it's been a very good move. Even though Halas, no one is more expert in football than George Halas.
I really think that the Bulls situation is going to be cleared up here in the next couple of months. Arthur Wirtz is smart an operator, as you know. Somebody wrote an article about him in the Chicagoan magazine. I don't know whether you saw it. The title of it was "The Baron of the Bottom Line."
Did you see that?
Yes, Wirtz has done an excellent job of running a hockey franchise here, but basketball is something that's relatively new to the Wirtz family, and I don't think they're as expert in that field. They have a long tradition in hockey. And as I mentioned to Mr. Wirtz the other day, when he was saying, I'm not sure we really need a general manager. He can't rebound for me. I said, well, look, when your hockey franchise was in trouble, you brought in a very, very good hockey man, Tommy Ivan from Detroit, and he built a winner for you here. When Tommy got old, got sick, you had problems again, you bring in Bob Pulford, a hockey man, to put the thing back on the tracks. I think that the same thing has to be done with the basketball organization, and I hope they realize it now.
You're baseball writers, and you've got some very good ones with the Chicago Sun-Times. I enjoy every bit of it, enjoy all their work, and most of them I know. I've been on the beat with them many, many times. What's the outlook for our two Chicago teams? How do you feel about the Cubs and the Sox?
I wish both of them had more pitching. I think they're going to be exciting. I'm considerably heartened by the performances so far. The White Sox are going to score so many runs again, and they're so much fun to watch. And the Cub pitching's been better than I thought, but I just can't. In April, you really can't tell. You know, it's been good so far, but I was talking to Woody Fryman after the home opener here. And I asked him, well, Woody, could you go every fourth day if you had to? He said, well, we'll find out, won't we? And I think we'll have to find out, but I'm not sure he can at age 38. Dennis Lamp and Kruko are going to have to do well in that rotation, and I think we're going to have to get a full season out of Ray Burris for a change. We get a good half season out of Ray Burris normally, or two-thirds of a season. The rest of the season, he can't do anything.
I think that really is the most encouraging thing about the Cubs so far. Burris has pitched real well. And if he can continue, I don't know what his problems have been, but they say Bonham, who went to Cincinnati, he had problems. And some wag out at Wrigley Field said he couldn't get his head screwed on right. I don't know what it was, but anyway, Burris is a very capable pitcher, I think, and if he can put it all together, they could surprise a lot of people.
They surely could. There's no unbeatable team in their division. If Philadelphia has a little bit of trouble, that thing can become a real rat race with several teams having an opportunity to win.
Yes, St. Louis is dangerous. They're an improved club. They got a real good chance. Philadelphia won a big game the night before last, 6-5 or 5-4 or something. They've got so much power, and they do have capable pitching. If those guys stay healthy, they look like the team to beat definitely in that division.
I think unquestionably so, but we've seen other teams to beat who looked like they had a lock on a division in the spring, sort of take a fade with a key injury here and there, and then it becomes a scramble. And also, you always have young players come through you hadn't counted on, really, in the great years by guys you thought weren't capable of those great years. And whoever thought that Jay Johnstone would leave the White Sox and go out and do what he did in Philadelphia. My gosh, that's what makes baseball so interesting.
Yes, he turned out to be a tremendous hitter.
He certainly did. This happens all the time. Last year we had Laron Legros on the south side. Who could have guessed that? I mean, really, relief pitchers. That's one thing that bothers me on the Cubs. I just hope Suter has another year, two-thirds of what he was last year, because that's about the best you can expect.
Now, the White Sox replaced Zisk with Bonds, who is an able ball player and probably a better outfielder than he was. But what about Gamble and those 31 home runs and all the runs he drove in? They can't, that first baseman can't replace him hitting-wise.
Bloomberg.
Bloomberg is off to a good start. This is, Beck is a gambling man, and I think he, the Bloomberg thing could be exciting, but I expect that they're going to get a lot more punch out of, having Lamar Johnson play every day, for one thing. If Bloomberg is healthy, he'll do well. Bonds certainly, I think Bonds will do everything that Zisk did and field better. Chet Lemon is going to be, I think, one of the stars of the American League for years to come. And I think that certainly his batting statistics should be better this year than they were last year. He's at the stage of his career where he'll be better every year.
I agree with you. He should be a real superstar one of these days. Well, Vec is exciting. He's put together an exciting team out there, and I know they're going to draw well. Let's hope that they play well. They have a little bit of trouble with the double play, and as I said in your paper, their pitching staff is not the pitching staff of a contender. I don't think anybody figures that they're going to beat out Kansas City or Texas. They could beat out California. But anyway, we're in for an exciting season. Our guest today, and we're delighted to have him, is Ray Sons, the sports editor of the Chicago Sun-Times, and we'll be back in just a moment. I'd like to remind everyone at this time that Rick Reuschel, great right-hander with the Cubs, is going to be here at our Irving Park office Thursday night from 6 o'clock until 8 o'clock. So if you got Cub fans in the family and kids that would like his picture and his autograph, just remember that Rick Reuschel will be here at Irving Park Thursday night between 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock. Our guest, Ray Sons, the sports editor of the Chicago Sun-Times. Ray, do you think that Badger did a capable job with the Bulls?
I think Badger did as well as could be expected with the Bulls. He was very unhappy in the end because of the limitations put upon him by the front office, and he was actually losing control of that team. Let me say, he probably did as well as he could early in the year. He had a failing late in the year in that he did not retain control of that team, and any manager has to do that. The big thing that a coach or manager in any sport has to do is just create an atmosphere in which the players play at their best. And I don't think that Ed did that all year long. He was critical of his players, and they should have been criticized, but he did not handle the criticism in a manner which was conducive to his retaining their support and their best efforts.
I agree with you. Ray, thanks so much for being with us today. Good fortune to you personally and to your great newspaper, the Chicago Sun-Times.
Thank you very much, Bob.
Our guest, Ray Sons, one of the nice guys in the business, a great writer, and the sports editor of the Sun-Times. Remember, baseball today, the final game of the series at Wrigley Field. Pittsburgh is here, and they're really staggering around. Chuck Tanner's having a rough time getting that club. They're in an awful batting slump. And the White Sox will wind up their series today at New York. Thursday night, Rick Reuschel will be at our Irving Park office, get his picture and his autograph between 6 o'clock and 8 o'clock. That's Thursday of this coming week. And now have a happy Sunday, and this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next weekend at the same time.